and the Geek.
And welcome to Gleeman and the Geek. Are we close to a rebound episode? I don't know. I'm John Bonas with Twins Daily. With me, Aaron Gleeman of The Athletic.
You might be saying this for every episode for a while.
Well, we might. Now, you know, I'm given a little bit of hope by the schedule here coming up. I think going into the Baltimore series, which I'm sure we're going to recap a little bit, we kind of said, we're like, boy, if we can just get one, that'd be pretty good. Expectations were already up pretty low, I think, going into that series. And then, of course, they didn't do that. But now things maybe easing up a little bit, Mr. Gleeman?
Yes, although, as I like to point out, which is really just the bit from Rounders put into baseball terms, people may recognize what I'm about to say.
Yes.
But when you start to look at the schedule and you start to think, oh, at least it's lightening up a little bit, you have to be cognizant, if you're playing as poorly as the Twins are, that teams are looking at you as the lightened up part of their schedule.
That's
as well.
That's right.
And at some point, now we're recording this for before Friday's game. They're returning home. Like you said, the schedule theoretically does lighten up. They're returning home to Target Field Friday night. They play three against the Tigers, who are essentially now at 500 after a pretty good start. And then they play four against the White Sox, and then they go out on a little road trip where they play the Angels, who are just not a very good team. They're 500-ish, but they're not a good team. And then three more, I think, against the White Sox, who are maybe the worst team in baseball at this point. So, and actually, then after that, I think they come back home. This is now 2+ weeks out. I don't know why I'm projecting this far ahead, but I think they play Boston then after
that.
Yeah,
they've got a day off, then a home team. Yeah, home series versus Boston. Right.
You know, I would expect Boston to be competitive, but they're not a particularly good team. And so the schedule that the Twins have played thus far, they've played six teams so far, once each. They all have winning records. Three of them, as we record this, are in first place. Two of them are not only in second place, but they're within a half game of first place.
Right.
And cumulative winning percentage of opponents, the Twins have played the toughest schedule in the American League. Now, that doesn't mean
we had something to do with that, just FYI.
Well, that's true, too. Yes, that's true. Although, in that case, you'd think the White Sox would probably have the most difficult schedule because they're just handed out wins, or they're handed out wins like it's nothing. But, you know, I think more so than – I agree with what you're saying. Like, you know, on paper, this is a spot where no matter how poorly you've been playing and no matter how down you are, you can, you know, get fat a little bit or at least start to claw back to 500. I mean, that's the goal at this point. They were so close to being 500.
Right.
They win the two doubleheader games on Saturday in Detroit, and then they take a 3-0 lead into the eighth inning on Sunday. And if they just close out that win, if the infield defense doesn't implode behind Caleb Thielbar and Griffin Jacks, they're 7-7. And maybe this happens the same way. Maybe you go and get, you know, destroyed by Baltimore anyway.
Right.
Baltimore's one of the best teams in baseball.
Yeah, but you don't feel so bad about it then, right? Like, you're 7-10, yeah, but, you know, we got our butts kicked by a really good team, so.
Yeah, and so now they're far enough back at 6-11 as we record this that it's, even if you play well now for this upcoming, you know, I don't know, 10-15 game stretch against lesser opponents, I'm not going to say easy opponents other than the White Sox, but it's going to take you a while just to get to 500. Like, I mean, unless you just clobber the White Sox for all, you know, go like 6-1 against them or something.
Sure.
I mean, just even winning series here is going to take you weeks to get back to 500. Mm-hmm. And that's something we've talked about pretty consistently over the years, but certainly this year as we've watched them kind of, stumble over and over. And just when it looks like they might be kind of picking themselves off the floor, they do a face plant.
To even suggest that they're in a position where they could start sweeping teams or taking, you know, running out of a four-game winning streak seems crazy. Like,
yes.
I would be happy to just win a series.
Versus,
you know, to go 2-1 and 3-1 over the next two series, I'd be thrilled.
Oh, for sure. I mean, I would say at this point, they need to have a winning record over some length of time. That is their goal.
Yeah.
And no matter how weak the opposition is and no matter how many games you have against the White Sox, like if this were normal circumstances, and even if the Twins were a couple of games below 500 right now and weren't clicking on all cylinders, but I'd be saying, oh, they got to take advantage. They got to go 5-2 against the White Sox. They got to go this and that and everything.
Right.
But, and that is true. Like if you do want to actually save this season, you ultimately probably do have to do that. But right now, my kind of expectation is like just get on track to the point that you cannot embarrass yourselves
Right.
against these weaker competition. Like literally go through a, 12 game stretch where you have a winning record. And then
Right.
we can
Yeah.
maybe talk
Right.
about some bigger and better things as you ramp back up here. I did want to note before we get going into the full on baseball, I recorded a solo episode because John remains 6,000 plus miles away. You're in Sapporo, Japan still
I'm in
right now?
Sapporo, Japan, or Sapporo.
Sapporo.
And I don't know which way you pronounce it now. My son pronounces it Sapporo. We say that to a lot of Japanese people. They're like Sapporo? So I don't know. So
I'm shocked that you, or really either of us, are pronouncing anything incorrectly on this
Japanese, right?
podcast.
Yeah.
But so John was gone and he was doing some traveling. And so on Wednesday, I, for the first time in like 10 years, I tried it like 10 years ago and
You
didn't love
did.
it.
Yeah.
So I tried it again, a solo episode. It was much better, more well received this time. I like to think because I've become such a seasoned broadcaster.
Yeah.
So I did a lot of mailbag
Or I've
questions.
just become more annoying.
Well, that's no comment. But I've become more annoying too, so that doesn't really, I don't think that really fits. But
Fair.
I said some nice things about you,
You did. Thank you very
and
much. Those are very nice.
I wasn't going to tell you that. The whole premise was, hey, everybody be cool, don't tell John, but you told me you listened to it already. So cat's out of the bag. Now I regret saying the nice things.
Well,
I also, if people are curious,
you're really going to regret it when I force you out of the podcast. I've been working on that for a few weeks
I don't know that I will, but we'll see. Now that I know I could start a solo one, how do you
that's a
know?
good point. That's a good
Maybe
point.
I'm the one going to be forced you out of
That's
the
a good
podcast,
point. It's a fair point.
buddy boy.
That's
I
right.
can just do monologues for a living. It's amazing.
That's great.
If anybody's curious, I talked a little bit about why I haven't been appearing on KFAN for a while. Gave a long answer about that, and then we had a lot of Chinese food talk, a lot of questions, and I only answered a fraction of the questions. People hear I'm talking by myself, and they go, "Well, Chinese food's, I guess, the topic," and they're not wrong. So if you're interested in any of that, I also just obviously answered a bunch of Twins questions and some Matt Wallner Larnach reactions because that was the news that had happened
Yeah.
earlier, a few hours earlier. We'll get back into that today because I'm curious to hear what you think about it too. Although you've cheated now, you've heard my personal thoughts on
Yeah,
something.
I did. Yeah, I did.
So now, knowing you and your tendency
I was
to,
trying to do some prep
well,
to play devil's advocate.
right. That's exactly what I was going to say. Jod,
Yeah.
he's toned that down over the years because I think he saw how often I short-circuited when he tried to play devil's advocate. I just kept screaming. I can picture in my head like 10 different bars where we've been at where I've said to you, "The devil does not need an advocate," something like that. So he got the message. But and then the only thing that, you know what, it kind of felt like recording a solo show. I only really had the cats with me. Becky was out of the house,
Yeah,
thankfully.
I caught the cat, several cat references.
Real, yeah, they were being very annoying, but not really on microphone. So it felt, like in an apocalypse or like a zombie movie
Right.
when there's like a few survivors, but they don't know, are there other survivors out there in the world still? So they
So you
record.
got some, like you're a dude, you're the dude on the ham radio, just out
Yes.
there throwing
That's right. And
out
like I remember, I think it was maybe an I Am Legend, which was a great book and a
Yeah.
mediocre movie.
Yeah.
He records like a message and then he figures out a way that just loop it 24 hours a day so
Right.
that anybody at any point who hears the radio will hear the same, 1 minute long message. So I felt like that. I felt kind of like I'm putting this message out into the world about Matt Wallner and Louis Varland and Chinese food. And that hopefully there are some survivors out there who are interested in hearing it and they can, well, don't meet up with me, but subscribe to the Patreon. So
As
that was my
we were exploring
vibe.
Tokyo last week for one day before we started trotting around Japan, one of the areas that we went to had to stop by was sort of the geek neighborhood, the legendary geek neighborhood of Tokyo, which is Akihabara, where they have, I mean, right now it used to be like electronics, cheap electronics and that sort of thing throughout, and then as they started moving to the suburbs, now it's like anime stuff. Like it became nerd culture center for
Okay.
Tokyo, right? and we're walking on the streets, and I saw a retail store, which was ham radio retail store. It was all ham radio stuff, like his ham radio repair shop and ham radios for sale. And
I think,
and I'm like,
this is
that
an example.
Is nerd culture, baby.
Oh, for sure. But I think this is an example of our exact age gap, because we're both old men at this point. But
right. Well, ham radios even before me, just so we're clear.
I have no, I mean, I know what a ham radio is, but I'm just like, man, I don't know. Whatever.
The one thing that I think I have probably used, which is only my generation, is like CB radios.
Yeah, that I've used before. I remember with my dad.
Okay. All right.
A little bit.
Okay. And he was a driver, right?
Yeah. You'd come up with like a code name or something and be like, right. There was all these like phrasing that you had to right. use to be like to say
10-4 good buddy or and there's a smoky on the
right. I was always like, what? I don't know. I mean,
I did not see a CB radio repair shop. I did see a ham radio repair shop and ham radio, like everything. I was like,
I don't know. I'm sitting here mocking it as if I wasn't, spending 10 years of my childhood in an AOL chat room or whatever. It's the well, same thing.
Right.
It's just
yes,
stupid.
Exactly right.
Like,
yes.
It's the exact same thing. Okay, so like you said, unfortunately, we should talk a little bit about the series against the Orioles. We'll keep it sort of brief, but they get the back-to-back wins in Detroit on the doubleheader. You think, all right, maybe they're clawing their way out of this. Maybe they stumbled out of the gates, but they're going to get right. Instead, they blow the lead Sunday, and that ends up being the first of four consecutive losses.
Right.
They got knocked around a little bit in Baltimore, but a couple of those games were close. I think it was not so much an example of getting destroyed so much as just being kind of outclassed. You're playing a very good team that is actually playing well and has recently called up some young talent, which they have an abundance of, and you are not playing well and you are not, clicking on all cylinders. And so I think more so than, it was discouraging, obviously, but
the discouraging the discouraging game was the last one.
Right.
Right. Because I didn't think, they went into that game with their, number four and number five starter. They've also had a bullpen that was pretty exhausted going after the series versus Detroit. And yeah, they're facing a really good team, but you could take a look at those first two games and go, yeah, but we got Pablo on the mound for, the Wednesday afternoon game. And
he pitched great, by the way.
He pitched great.
He gives up the homer in the first, and then he goes six shutout basically with seven strikeouts.
Yeah, right.
And to your point, not only were they facing the back of the Orioles rotation, Tyler Wells was former Twin prospect Tyler Wells, who was a Rule 5 pick years ago, is hurt.
Right.
And so they had to make a last minute kind of spot start call up for somebody to pitch that game.
Which is a great story if you're not a Twins fan.
Yeah, I saw Ken Rosenthal wrote about it today. I said, that's the power of the Twins lineup.
Right.
They don't have any actual hitting power, but they have the power to get this minor league 34-year-old written about by Ken Rosenthal on The Athletic. Albert Suarez, who hadn't pitched in the majors since 2017 and wasn't particularly good at that, back then.
Right.
He's been overseas. He's been in the minors and all that. And he shut him out for 5 2/3 and probably could have kept going. And that, I agree. That was the example where it's just like, it almost doesn't matter who is thrown out there against this lineup at this point. Like, we can talk about the Tyler Glasnows and the Scoobles and the, even some young talent, Bobby Miller, whoever it is. Like, they face some really good pitchers, obviously. Cole Reagans early on in the season. But let's not kid ourselves. They face some garbage, too. And I'm not denigrating this dude Suarez, who actually looked, I thought, from a stuff standpoint, potentially pretty good. But, they faced guys like, the washed up remains of Carlos Carrasco not too long ago.
Right.
Like, they faced plenty. Joe Ross. I mean, all these guys these are the guys you're supposed to get for five runs in three innings or something like that. And it almost doesn't matter who they toss out there against the Twins.
Then the other thing about that is that, as we, look at this team and we said, okay, the hitting has been dismal, right? But, that's going to progress at some point. Just the law of regression kind of plays into it. But also, they're holding it together because the starting pitching has been very, especially the top of the rotation, very good. And then the bullpen, somehow, the area we were most worried about coming into the team, has been really, really good. So just so long as the hitting can come together before that other stuff starts falling apart, we're going to be in pretty good shape. Well, it can go the other way too, right? That suddenly the back end of the rotation starts showing some major leakage, and then the bullpen just brings a couple of bad leaks at the wrong time in some close games. Last game of the, I mean, I don't blame the bullpen for the last game of the Detroit series, and I don't, when we, I don't blame Stephen Oakert for giving up a home run. Like, Stephen Oakert is not supposed to be, pitching high leverage innings, in as many high leverage innings as he has been doing up to this point.
Right.
But, that is just the sort of thing that sort of happens in this, because this offense gives you no room for error. You've got, you've lost two games now that you should have won, and that's the difference between being 6-11 and 8-9.
Yeah. I mean, that was the point I was going to make, which you made, which is it's the same as the first half of last year. It's like, you put the, not only do you waste like great starts, like a really good starts, like Pablo Lopez's start, where if they just scored 5 runs, everyone would have been talking about how great Pablo Lopez was.
Right.
That would be the story. It becomes a non-story because the game is close and they can't score any runs. And then to your point, Stephen Oakert has performed well above expectations so far.
Yeah.
But regardless if it's Stephen Oakert or Duran or Mariano Rivera in his prime, you can't consistently hand a bullpen, a 1-run lead, 2-1 game or 3-2 game or a tie game or whatever, and expect them to get 9 outs while being perfect. I mean, game after game after game. And you definitely can't expect that when you're down Duran and Theobar's just back and you're down Topa, you're down multiple relievers. And so at some point, the cracks are going to start to show because these guys are human and they're being pushed into higher leverage roles than they ought to be. The defense also has gotten very, very sloppy, in part because, I mean, you're down your Gold Glove shortstop. You're playing a couple of guys who are utility guys are now starters at both shortstop and third base, including sometimes Miranda, who they really have no interest in playing at third base.
Right.
And so it's not surprising that the infield defense has let up. There's also been a couple of plays in the outfield that weren't great either. And so you toss all that together. And like you said, the whole premise of, well, yeah, they haven't been hitting, but the pitching's been pretty good. So once the hitting comes around, they'll be in good shape. Well, that failed on both fronts. The hitting has not come around at all, really. Right. I mean, they're still for this season hitting 193. I have a stat
the
for you.
The whole team, yeah, as a
the
team.
The team is hit, yes. Not only is that the lowest batting average in the major leagues this season, it is the second lowest batting average through 17 games by any American League team in the last 50 years. And the only one that was worse was the 2003 Detroit Tigers. I don't know if you remember that team.
Has that team that lost like 100 and some games? Yeah.
It's literally the worst team in the history of the American League. Right. 119 losses. Right. They went 43-119. That's the only team with a lower batting average than the Twins through this stage of the season. And look, we'll be the first ones to tell you, batting average doesn't mean everything. And they're, slugging and stuff on base are slightly better than batting average. But that it doesn't matter when you're hitting 193.
Right.
Batting average means a lot when you're hitting 193. And they're hitting, I think, 144 with runners in scoring position, which means in the rare chances when they actually do string together a couple of hits and they put the opposing pitcher up against the ropes, they can't deliver a knockout blow to save their life. And so that
good news is that they're only 50 points below their batting average and with runners in scoring position.
Right. If they could just get back up to 193, they'll be honestly, they'd have two more wins if they hit 193 with runners in scoring position. Probably. Yeah, I mean, I know that sounds silly, but there is potentially some level of help on the way in that Kepler began his rehab Thursday in St. Paul. He was a DH, batted second. There's no timeline yet officially on Carlos Correa or even Brooks Lee, although I would expect before Friday's game, once they return home and the media jackals such as myself will be there asking about that. So we should have an update on that probably for Monday's show maybe. And then the sense I have with Royce Lewis, I mean, he wasn't expected back anytime soon, but the sense I have with him is, maybe push back whatever timeline you had in your head probably by a couple of weeks because he really hasn't started doing anything of note. Theobar, like I said, is back. And then Duran is scheduled to throw pregame Friday off a mound. I think
versus live batters, right?
Yeah, live BP. And so My
That's a
assumption
good
would
sign.
be yes, and that's way ahead of schedule.
That would be the last step before a rehab assignment, probably.
Exactly.
Right.
If that goes well, it's possible they have him do that twice,
Right.
but it's also possible that he looks good Friday, feels good. He said at the end of the last homestand to us that he's pain free, and he just kept saying, "I'm so bored. I'm so bored. I got to get to throw it again. I got to start again." So, that would help obviously with the upcoming schedule. But before we get into Wallner-Larnach discussion and maybe some discussion about the rotation too, let's talk about our first couple of sponsors.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about SodaStick. SodaStick gear. If you came to the opening day party that we had at Forgotten Star, you got a preview of some of SodaStick stuff. I got to tell you, they just recently reordered a lot of their baseball centric stuff. The Twinkies hat, which is one of their favorites, or one of them has been, and frankly, pretty apropos right now for the way the team is playing, is back in stock, or was back in stock. The most popular one at the Forgotten Star one I saw was the Twin Cities hat
Yeah.
that they've got, which kind of resembles the Twin Cities uniform and stuff. It's sort of a trucker hat. I think it's by far the best one. I personally bought a Minnesota Kicks hat because I'm old and I remember the Minnesota Kicks, and
And let's be honest,
I thought it
John,
was cool.
you were a college soccer player,
Well, I was a
buddy.
college soccer
So
player.
let's,
Yes, that's right.
you're just, you love soccer. I'm assuming the
They've
Minnesota
got
Kicks are soccer.
Metrodome stuff, Wiener Winner stuff, the Tony Oliva stuff. A lot of their classics are there. And they've also got a new hat coming out with for Dinkytown Athlete, which is the organization that's trying to raise money for NIL for the University of Minnesota Athletics. They've got a brand new hat with that. They are just go to the site, browse it. You will find stuff that you like.
Yes.
And you'll
Soda
find.
stick, like Minnesota, sodastickco.com, or just Google soda stick. And then when you check out, because you're going to find stuff you want, use the promo code Gleeman, Gleeman, and you will get 15% off on all your orders.
Yep, Mother's Day, Father's Day. We've got all kinds of stuff, all kinds of reasons, not just for yourself, but for other people to check out sodastick.com. And then also we'll talk about RotoWire. Baseball season is back in full swing, and your fantasy team is hitting even worse than the Minnesota Twins. What are you gonna do? Your draft is over. I would suggest maybe you break down and try out the free RotoWire subscription that we've talked, just 2 days of having it, and you're going to recognize exactly how valuable it is. Unbelievable the breakdown of news it has. If you're looking for, what players can I pick up, what players might be coming off the IL soon, it's really good for that. It's got all of the tools that you're going to need, not just for your fantasy baseball season, but also you find yourself in an NBA postseason draft, or you are prepping for the football draft that is going to be coming for a
Yeah.
few months.
Or daily fantasy, they have a
Oh
lot
my
of
God.
tools for
Yeah.
that
Right.
too.
Yeah.
You mentioned it's a totally free trial, and we really mean that this time. They don't even ask you for a credit card. And so you go to rotowire.com/Gleeman. Gleeman and the Geek listeners can get a 48-hour, 2-day, completely free trial because they're so confident that if you start messing around on the site and look around a little bit, read some of the analysis, look at the player news, everything.
Yeah.
You'll want to continue because it's a
Yeah,
good product.
free
We've
free
both been
free up
using
your
it
schedule.
for.
Yeah, free up your schedule for those 48 hours. You're going to spend a lot of time over at rotowire.com. That's rotowire.com.
Slash Gleeman, 2-day
Slash
free
Gleeman.
trial.
Yes, right.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit, Wallner and Larnach.
Yeah.
Obviously, I talked about my own earlier, but Wallner demoted to AAA. Larnach, who had been rehabbing a foot injury or toe injury, I think. With Fort Myers, I think he went like 2-for-11 or something like that. So it's not like he was on fire or had played at all at AAA to really
Right.
kind of push the envelope here. This
Right.
was a move made because of Wallner.
Yeah.
And like I said on the solo show, there's almost no circumstance where if I'm just making decisions, well, let's stop there. There's almost no circumstance where I'm making decisions, even in my own life.
Well,
Like when we finish recording this,
what the Chinese food is that's
right.
that for the day,
But
right?
you say that, except when we finish recording this, I'm going to say this really quietly because the door is not that thick here. But I'm going to walk out there and I'm going to say, "Honey, what are we getting for
What do you
dinner?"
have for supper? Yeah.
So, but anyway, in the theoretical universe where I'm making baseball decisions, I don't think there is really any scenario other than if someone was like 0 for 33 with 33 strikeouts, or they were, you know, clearly mentally unfit to play, or something was happening that you could really note. I don't think I'd be demoting anybody off of 33 plate appearances, which is what Matt Wallner had. Now, with that said, he wasn't that far off from that 0 for 33 scenario.
Right.
He went 1 for 24 with 17 strikeouts, and then the rest were hit by pitches and walks and sac flies or whatever. And so he wasn't quite as bad as that makes it sound, but he was pretty lost at the plate. You know, he was struggling just to make any sort of consistent contact, let alone good quality, you know, hard contact. And so, you know, I don't know. He also struggled during spring training, for whatever that's worth, and wasn't great in the playoffs. But my worry is not so much that the Twins will feel this way, but I think fans and even media members are so quick to, especially early in the season, to change their opinions about someone based on especially a streak like this that is so ugly.
Right.
You know, don't forget that he was great in the second half of last year.
Right.
And he played 12 games this year, and they were bad. I mean, I'm not making any excuses on that front.
Right.
But he played 94 games prior to this year for the Twins, 320 plate appearances. So roughly 10 times as many plate appearances as he had this year. And he had an 842 OPS and a 132 OPS plus. I mean, those are all-star caliber numbers, or at least borderline all-star caliber numbers. So, you know, 90% of his career has been that, and 10% of his career has been flailing away the last 2 or 3 weeks.
Sure.
And, you know, you can only react to what's in front of you. I'm not expecting them to make decisions more based on last August than on this, you know, this week or last week. But I don't know. I probably would have given him a little bit more time. With that said,
yeah, I didn't have a problem with it. I mean,
I don't have a huge problem with it. And I do like the idea, just, you know, separately, like independently, of giving Larnach one more chance.
Yeah.
Like, I would have liked if that they could have found a way to do that and have Wallner stick around and click and everything, but that wasn't really necessarily in the cards right now.
Yeah, no, I think I'd actually differ with you. I'd prefer it if both of them were, you know, spending a little time in AAA, getting up a chance to click there right now.
Well, that's fair too. Yeah, I mean, right. Larnach,
this was a mercy killing, right? You know, Wallner's been totally lost at the plate. They didn't call up, like you said, this was about Wallner, not about Larnach. And in fact, you know, Larnach looked good in spring training, but, you know, he would just come back from injury. He hadn't, you know, shown a lot in a rehab assignment. Not that you, I mean, it was a 3-day, he played 3 games or something, right?
No, but if you send a 27-year-old major leaguer to Fort Myers.
Right.
Theoretically, they could hit a few bombs to make you feel better about it.
Fair point, right? You know, and, you know, he's also, you know, coming back from an injury, and he's also had trouble coming back from injuries. You might have liked to have seen a little bit more from that. This felt to me more like, listen, we've got to just get Wallner reset. Like, we have to, we need a hard reboot of Matthew Wallner, and that hard reboot is going to have to happen at St. Paul.
You call him Matthew, like his mom yelling at him. He did something bad. Matthew Wallner. I don't know what his middle name is, but I'm going to look it up. I think this is funny enough to do. Let's see. That's right. Matthew Wallner.
You know, the league has made some
adjustments. Matthew John Wallner. Matthew John Wallner. You go to AAA and have a hard reset. Sorry to any Wallner family members.
You know, he's certainly made adjustments mid-season last year in how they it's also clear that he was having a lot of trouble with the adjustment that the league has made to him, throwing him that off-speed stuff down and in, especially.
Yes, but like you said, I thought he looked – I mean, we were having similar conversations about him like in early August last year.
Right.
Where he went through an 0 for stretch and looked terrible. He was swinging through high fastballs. And I just think to myself, what would have happened? They stuck with him for the most part. Yeah. He took a couple days off and worked with the hitting coaches specifically on, you know, catching up to high velocity. And then he was great for 6 weeks or 2 months. Right. And then I think to myself, well, what would have happened if they would have sent him to AAA for a hard reset at that point? Maybe. Would he have not even gotten back to the majors? Maybe. And then what would the situation be? They're not always identical.
But he also talked about how by the time the postseason came, the league had made another adjustment to him. Right. I think he even mentioned this at the meltdown, right? where they were starting to throw him, off speed stuff low in the zone to try. And once he made the adjustment for, okay, I need to start looking for stuff high in the zone that's that got some speed, the league said, okay, now that we've got you looking for that, let's try you let's try you throwing you this thing, right? And yeah, it was clear that he's, I mean, it's not just the one batting average or something, it's all the strikeouts and such that's going on. And we agree that he got screwed on a couple of those plate appearances by umpiring on some of those things. But I think they just like, listen, we got to get him playing. Let, AAA pitchers now know what the major league pitchers do. We're gonna throw the exact same crap to him that he was struggling with up at that level. And now we've got to see if he can, make that adjustment down there. And I don't think this is not a, is he not the guy we thought he was moment. I think this is a, he's got to make yet one more adjustment, and I wouldn't be shocked if we see him in a month.
Right. No, I agree with that. I think I agree with what you were saying. When I said about Larnach that I, independent of Wallner, I do like the idea of giving him another chance. I didn't mean now, basically, right off the IL.
Just FYI, so, yes, I'm the same way. I've still got high opinion of Larnach. I think he's
I do agree with what you were saying. It would be nice if Larnach had been at AAA for these past two or three weeks, or even beyond that, and had a 950 OPS for the Saints or something, and you could feel comfortable not only that, okay, we feel like Wallner needs a hard reset. I think that's debatable, but whatever. But also attached to that, we feel like Larnach has kind of forced the issue himself and earned the opportunity himself. Instead, it's like, well, okay, we, like you said, it's a mercy killing for Wallner. We just feel like he's in too deep a hole to dig out. Now, I think a lot of the same things were said about him last year, and he did dig out of it, which is sort of what I'm sticking to here. But, with Larnach being the guy to call up, part of it is just they don't have anybody else.
Right.
Like, everyone's hurt. Unless you're going to, they just signed Tony Kemp, who's like a, journeyman, major league, 32-year-old left-handed hitter, utility man. I mean, you could have called up Tony Kemp. You could have called up somebody from AAA that is just kind of a placeholder or a seat filler. I like the idea of not doing that. I like the idea of giving a chance to someone who can actually, has some upside, might still be part of your future, at least for this year, maybe next year, something like that. But I would have liked it a lot better if Larnach had kind of done anything to earn it. Right. And it's also just interesting to me that you couldn't really find two more stylistically similar players. They're both big, strong, slow, left-handed hitting corner outfielders who can hit the ball a long way but struggle with, swing and miss.
Yeah, right.
There are some non-similarities in there, dissimilar in a lot of ways. But, the way we talk about Wallner now is not that far off from the way we probably talked about Larnach two or three years ago.
Right.
And hopefully Wallner isn't headed down that same path. But, I mean, Larnach is 27. He's played almost 200 games for the Saints. He has like 700 plate appearances roughly over 3 years. As you noted, he's almost always been banged up with injuries. So he hasn't had a great stretch of health where he's kind of had 3 months of healthy runway. So, give him the benefit of the doubt there. But he's hit .222 with a .385 slugging percentage. I mean, that's just for that player type, that's not going to work.
Right.
I think the difference is Wallner just last season alone had more success already in his first real extended chance in the majors than Larnach has had at any point in 3 years.
Yeah.
And so that's my only differential. But I mean,
I wouldn't argue. I would still argue that Wallner's a better prospect than Larnach. And it'll be interesting, frankly. Like, I'm being a little critical about bringing Larnach into this mix at this point, but I have no problem giving him another chance. Don't get me wrong. I'd like to give him an extended chance, and I think he's got a decent time at getting an extended chance at some point this year, in part because, they've also got to figure out what they're going to do with in right field next year with Kepler gone.
I was just about to mention that. So Kepler, who himself is going to come off the IL here relatively soon, I'll be curious if Larnach is the move there or if they just send down Jair Camargo and keep all the outfielders, basically.
Yeah.
I probably would do that because I don't think you're in a position, given how the offense has played, where you can feel like you have too many bats, whether they're left-handed, whether they're right-handed, whether they're whatever.
Fair point.
I think you just need bats.
I haven't been paying enough attention to Jeffers, the Jeffers-Vasquez merry-go-round? Is it just going back and forth on this point, and then on the
Well,
days that Vasquez is catching, Jeffers is playing DH? Because I noticed I did take a look at, you know, who has the most starts at DH so far this year, and it was Jeffers at the top of the list, along with Buxton and Kirilloff.
yeah, I mean, they've basically, it's still sort of a alternating timeshare at catcher, but yeah, like you said, Jeffers has essentially been a DH. I don't think he's had like a regular day off more than once.
Right.
And he's one of the few bright spots for the lineup at
Right.
this point.
Yes.
And he actually got off to a slow start too. But he's got three homers. He has a pinch hit homer. He's got a, I don't know, probably the best OPS on the team. He's had some clutch hits. He also had that ball down the third baseline that was ruled an error, but ended up driving in a couple of key runs in Detroit. And, you know, he's been one of the few bright spots. And I think that's why they called up, well, they called up Camargo similar to why they called up Larnach, because he was on the 40-man roster and he was healthy, and there
Right,
weren't
yeah,
really any
right.
other hitters
That's a fair
for whom
point.
that description fit.
Yeah,
But
that's the truth. You're right.
he's been basically collecting dust as a
Right,
third catcher.
right.
But what that allows them to do is then play Jeffers as a, you know, basically the main DH, or at least the halftime DH. And that's been one of the only productive kind of adjustments that they've made over the last week or two, is to get Jeffers near the top of the lineup as a DH or as a catcher. And let him swing away. And but going back to the corner outfield thing, you know, is I believe that Wallner, his like extended opportunity came when Larnach got hurt last year. So you've
That
just
might be
sort of
right.
flipped the script a little bit. Now, like I said, when Kepler comes back, probably within a week, I would guess, does Larnach go? I would say no, just because there's plenty of at bats to go around for anybody you think can hit.
Right.
And they've been playing like Manuel Margot in the corner against
Right.
righties. You know, I mean, they're not in a position where they can go, it's too crowded. First of all, that's absurd for a team hitting 193 just on its
Right.
face.
Right.
But even if you look a little deeper than that, I mean, you're using Ryan Jeffers as your DH, which that's fine, but you also could just use him more at catcher and play an actual hitter at DH instead of using Vasquez. I don't think Vasquez has played as poorly offensively, nowhere near as is low batting average and numbers suggest. I actually think he's hit the ball hard a few times and not get any results for it. But, you know, I don't know that we're at the point here where he needs to be playing 50% of the time
Right.
until
Yeah.
proven otherwise when
And
you're
by the way,
struggling
I
for
just looked it
offense.
up. It has been 50% of the time. It's been
Yeah.
back and forth every game. It's been Jeffers to Vasquez to Jeffers to Vasquez all the way through the first
Yeah.
17 games. So.
And I mean, if you're going to stick with that, which clearly they think that's the way to go, and that's fine. I do. I mean, the adjustment to start using Jeffers more and more as a DH is at least a good one there. I mean,
Right.
at least let him do some damage offensively while he's in a good groove. And I think, you know, realistically, he's one of your better hitters at this point, even setting aside the very recent results and all that. So I don't know. The offense, I mean, they've gotten some help from Austin Martin and Jose Miranda, who were both kind of added in tandem there when the injuries first hit with Correa. And, you know, like I said, Camargo hasn't really been asked to do anything, but he's opened up Jeffers to play DH. So,
Sure.
you know, the combination of more DH time for Jeffers and then mixing in Miranda at third base and first base, mixing in Martin in the two outfield spots. And I think he even played a little bit of second base. Those look, they're not, you know, Martin and Miranda are not lighting the world on fire, but they've at least had some, you know, competent, competitive at bats. Martin's come through with a few clutch hits because of his contact skills. Miranda's hit the ball hard in the air a couple of times, which is
Yep.
always good to see from him. So, you know, that's at least helped. But the problem is, you know, you start to get a boost from those type of guys, which you weren't getting earlier in the season. But it's similar to the thing where we're like, well, once the hitting comes around and the pitching stays good, they'll be in good shape. Well, it's like, well, now that they're getting some production from Martin, Miranda, and Jeffers, they should be in good shape. Except Byron Buxton is like 5 for 100
Right.
at this point. He looks just awful. Just and has, by the way, has played a ton.
Yeah,
He's essentially,
at the top of the order.
yeah, in the middle. But I mean, also,
Right.
who's going to
Middle
hit?
top.
Like,
Right.
you can't construct a lineup where more than like three guys make sense from a production standpoint in the spots they're hitting,
because
everyone's hitting 120.
Right.
But Buxton is just swinging and missing so often at fastballs and breaking balls. And he's chasing pitches. And it's just early in the season, I thought he looked great. He was lining some balls into the corner. He was playing every day. He's made several good catches in the outfield. I'm just encouraged big picture by the fact that he really, even when he's taken a couple of days off, you know, he's pinch hit or pinch run or come in defensively, which in past years they've avoided doing that. I mean, he's played basically every game, and he started probably, I don't know, 80% of the games or more, which is good to see. But I looked it up. He's hitting, well, overall, he's hitting 193 with 22 strikeouts and one walk. He's 5 for his last 38 with 18 strikeouts. And I mean, it's looked every bit as bad as that. Mm-hmm. It's not like he's getting robbed of hits.
Right.
And then, you know, Willie Castro has struggled all season. He's striking out like 40-something% of the time. Mm. I worry that, you know, he's turning back into a pumpkin, which was the fear with him.
I was going to put this off till the end of the later on in the podcast, but let me touch on it now. One of the big questions that we've got to start asking, and I'm sure you're going to hit us with plenty of stats about how dismal this offense is at some point here, right?
I have a lot of them at my disposal.
Right, okay. And I was waiting to bring up that point, this up at that point, but since we're kind of going through the lineup, let's go through the lineup. The question is sort of like, at what point when you've got a historically bad start, do you say, well, maybe we just don't have a very good offense? Like, maybe it's not just April. Maybe it's not just, and what has always been, you know, up to like this last week had been, you know, I take a look at all the names in this lineup. Yeah, there's a bunch of guys not hitting, but, you know, that's out of character. These guys should be hitting, okay? Well, then today I open it up and I take a look at the lineup, or I take a look at sort of the top guys at each position, who's been starting at each position. And there's going to be 9 names here. Let's see how many of them we have confidence in that they're much better than they've been playing. Okay. Well, Ryan Jeffers, right? He's
been great.
He's been great, right? Yeah. So we're not going to get a lot more from Ryan Jeffers.
Right.
First base, starting most times at first base, is Carlos Santana.
Yes.
Well,
he appears to me to be cooked, unfortunately.
Right. So I don't have a lot of confidence that he's going to be. Listen, I think he's better than a 135 hitter, a 378 OPS.
Well,
guy,
right.
So there's going to be some progression to the mean, maybe. But
right. This notion of like, let's go through the names and who among these names should be playing better than they have been.
Right.
Well, the answer is realistically almost all of them. But what you're really getting at is, like, you know, Willie Castro's hitting 130. No matter how poorly you think of Willie Castro, he's not a 130 hitter. I mean, he might be a 230 hitter. But all these guys, there is some regression coming in the sense that if anybody is even a functional AAA player, let alone a major league player, if you give them enough at-bats, they're not going to hit 140. They might hit 10.
Right.
And so there's some regression coming there. But your larger point, as you can – resume reading the names, but I agree. I think the bigger point you're making, which is that, like, how many of these guys, it's honestly, it kind of reminds me of the bullpen discussion, which you remove Duran and you remove Theobar for a while and you remove Topa, and then everybody kind of slides up a role or two, and it can work if they all perform at exactly their high point or their, you know, 70th percentile or something. But what happens is when a few of them slump, or in this case, a lot of them slump, it becomes exposed very quickly because these are guys that are not intended. You know, Willie Castro isn't supposed to be playing every day. Kyle Farmer isn't supposed to be playing every day.
Right.
Manuel Margot's not supposed to be playing against righties. Carlos Santana at age 38, I would argue, is not supposed to be playing every day. And so that, I think, is your larger point, and I completely agree with that. You look up and down the lineup, almost all these guys will, if given enough time, hit better than they have thus far. But that's a very low bar, and a lot of these guys just should not be playing this much, but because they've had so many injuries, you know, Correa, Lewis, Kepler, there's 3 of your 5 best hitters. Everybody else moves up a spot, and they get more playing time, and they get exposed, unfortunately.
That's right. Yeah, especially as we look forward to, like, these next 13 games, right, where, you know, you've got a little bit easier schedule, just step down in sort of what you've been facing, et cetera. Is it reasonable to say, listen, at some point, weather's going to warm up and stuff. All these bats are going to heat up. Well, they will heat up. Like, the ones who are really dismal are, in fact, going to heat up a little bit. But it's more like, you know, do I have confidence that this player is going to be sort of an average or above average performer at their position, right? And, you know, Jeffers, I do. Santana, I don't. At second base, Julian, I do. But, you know, Again, I think he's also due for some progression. He's not going to hit 175 on the season, right?
Right. But he's roughly been an average.
Right, right.
I mean, he's got a, I don't know, 700 OPS or something like that.
At shortstop, yeah. I mean, I had Carlos Correa still has the most starts at shortstop, but he's going to be passed in that pretty soon by probably Willie Castro. How much confidence do I have in Willie Castro? Well, not that much. You know, I mean, right. Again, he's probably not going to be hitting, was he in 122? You know, he's probably going to be better than that. But still, not a ton of confidence there. So now I'm two for two, right? Third base, Kyle Farmer is leading the team in starts at third base right now. Well, you know, Kyle Farmer isn't, again, not going to hit 097, but he's also, like, he's not an everyday player versus right-handed pitchers. And
right.
He's going to be facing a lot of right-handed pitchers.
That's the real biggest thing is, like, whether it's Santana, who I thought when they signed him, the only reason I didn't hate that signing was because I kind of presumed he was just going to play mostly against lefties. Well, that hasn't been the case. He's not an everyday player. Right. You know, Farmer against lefties, solid. Farmer playing every day, not solid. Right. Willie Castro is your last guy on the bench, you know, pinch running and coming in defensively and hitting, you know, once in a while and being spotted all over. Could be potentially solid.
Right.
Willie Castro as an everyday shortstop? No, not.
Right,
the Tigers, who were terrible when they had Willie Castro, didn't even believe in him as an everyday shortstop. And there's other names on this list that you'll probably get to where it's the same. Margot, same thing. Margot playing three times a week, right. You know, in left field versus lefties, great. Margot playing six times a week, no matter the pitcher, as a corner outfielder? Well, no, there's no path to that being particularly good. So, yeah, I don't know. That's kind of where they are because of injuries.
Starting the most at left field? Now, we've gone through the infield. We're 2-3, right? Left field, the most starts in left field right now is Austin Martin.
Yeah.
Which, you know, listen, Austin Martin's been playing fine. You know, he's 306. I pay most attention to his on-base percentage. 306 on-base percentage is a little lower than I would hope for, but he's been
right.
fine.
He's drawn a few walks. He's hit a few doubles. Right. He's run a little bit. He hasn't struck out a ton, and he's played some pretty good defense. He's at least sort of stabilized. It's a low level of production,
right.
But it's not anything. It's so much better than
it's a little like Willie Castro last year. Truth be told, you know,
it doesn't seem like much in a functioning lineup. You know, like you said, he's got a 640 OPS or whatever. That's not anything to get excited about. But when half the veterans are hitting 097, just having a rookie that you can call up that is at least, you know, not embarrassing himself is something of an asset at least.
Right, and in general, I take a look at the options in left field and I don't see a lot of great I don't see an option in left field where I'm like, oh, there's the one I have a lot of confidence he's going to be an average or above average left field.
Right. I mean, it's going to be Larnick probably for a while here. Or I'm going to assume
at least a few days. Right. Yeah. We'll see. Right. Center field, Buxton. Well,
yeah,
I mean,
we talked about
it. We talked a little bit about him. Like, you know, I don't think he's a 193 hitter, but you know, he had a terrible year last year. Now we all, I think, justifiably said, well, he was injured last year. It can be a double blind situation too, you know, where he might just, it might take him a while to get back on track. That's the positive answer. The other answer is maybe he's just not as good as he was you know, at 30 years old as he was when he was 26 years old. Right. So I'll put him a sort of a third category. Like, I'm just not sure. Right. Right field. Well, Matt Wallner has had the most starts there. He's now in AAA, right? We've got Kepler coming back. I don't know how much faith we've got in Kepler at this point. I mean,
I'll take the over on a 050 batting average from this point forward. On next.
Right, right. But again,
it's sort of like,
maybe I put that in sort of the third category. Like, I just don't really know what we've got in right field. It's possible we've got it. Could go either way, average or above average, right? And then DH, you know, Kirilloff has been good, you know, very good. Overall numbers. So maybe we put him in the positive category for now. Okay. So I've got, you know, I'm at 3-4-2 here. Like that. I can't take a look at this lineup and go, oh yeah, everybody, you know, they're batting 193. They're one of the historically worst starts of the season, but look at all these names. Look at all these guys who are going to bounce back. No, I've got three guys who are, you know, who I think are going to be above average. I've got four positions I'm real worried about. I've got two I should probably be worried about.
Right. I mean, you know? I maybe am slightly more optimistic on a couple of those guys, but I definitely get the point. And I think, you know, any optimism that we had or projection systems had or anybody had, the Twins themselves, about this lineup, I'll treat it like the bullpen. I mean, I wrote an article midway through spring training. I said, this is the deepest bullpen the Twins have ever had. It projects as one of the best bullpens. And so now every time they blow a lead, I get 10 people tweeting at me. I thought you said the bullpen was good. Well, yeah, I thought it would have, Duran in it and Theobar healthy and Topa. And this is not the bullpen that was on paper. And I'll say the same thing about the lineup is like, maybe we were wrong about how good the lineup could be or would be or should be. But we don't even really have a way to test that yet because
Right.
Royce Lewis has had two at bats. He's their best player. Carlos Correa is, has been out for a week now out of 3 weeks and is going to miss more
Right.
time. And he was, had been still probably their MVP so far this season. And, Kepler provided nothing and then has been injured.
Right.
Those are three of your best players. And so, yeah,
It's
it's like,
literally the guys we thought were going to be two, three, and four in the lineup coming
right. And
into the
so you
season. Right.
go, well, were we wrong about the lineup? And it's like, maybe, except
Right.
if this version of the lineup is what you had asked me to project, I would not have been optimistic about it at all. I could tell you that if you would have said to me, I just landed on Earth from Mars and you said, well, you'd have to explain baseball. You'd have to explain a lot to me. But setting that aside, you said, here's the lineup. How good do you think it'll be? Carlos Santana's the everyday first baseman. Kyle Farmer's the third baseman. Willie Castro's playing shortstop. They got Austin Martin
Right.
in left field. Trevor Larnach, they're giving another chance to in the corner. Manny Margot's playing against lefties and righties. They got Vasquez playing half the time behind the plate and on and on and on. I go, well, that's not a very good lineup at all. They're short about three or four good bats.
Right. Yeah.
To which you might be like, yeah, maybe Royce Lewis, Carlos Correa, and Max Kepler.
Yeah.
Now, maybe even with those guys healthy, they're instead of hitting 193, maybe they're hitting 208. And we're still having largely the same discussion about the lineup. But
Yeah, right.
unfortunately, we don't know because this is not anybody's idea of what the lineup should have been, basically.
Yeah, I mean this what I just went through is, a bottom quartile
Yes.
lineup, right? I mean, so does that mean they have to be the worst overall or second worst in runs per game or third worst in runs per game in Major League? But they're not even going to be average, at least not for a
Right.
while, until either, we start seeing, Santana come alive, or Buxton come alive, or Kepler return and take things up, or people get healthy, or some rookies that
Right.
Larnach surprising us and becoming the player we thought he was going to be 3 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I would say that if
There's a lot of ways it could turn, but right now, it's not a particular. We're just wrong about this lineup right now. So.
yes, I agree about the overall talent level as currently constructed is underwhelming. However, I do think we're maybe, or you're maybe, underestimating the level at which even the stretched thin role players are underperforming
Well, that's true.
a
You're
reasonable
right.
expectation.
You're absolutely right.
And I think it's easy to overlook that because in your head, you might say, well, Farmer hasn't been good, Santana hasn't been good, Castro hasn't been good, blah, blah, blah. But it's not just that they haven't been good or even
Right.
that they've
No,
been
you're right.
bad.
You're absolutely
It's
right.
that they're hitting 120
No,
or 097.
you are absolutely
So,
right. I am absolutely underestimating how much just a little bit of progression to the mean
right.
could be, right? Like these guys aren't just Kyle Farmer isn't just hitting like Kyle Farmer versus right-handed hitters. He's hitting like, I don't know,
Aaron
much more.
Gleeman.
Yes, someone's right. Like Aaron Gleeman versus right-handed pitchers. That's right. Yeah.
I really knocked around. Were you right? Are you a right-handed hitter?
I am a
Were you a right-handed?
right-handed.
Me too. I
That's
was a. I believe I'm fit to be a platoon DH. Is
right.
really my role in even in Little League. Actually, I was a good fielder in Little League.
Let's talk a little bit. Yeah, cover a couple more sponsors here before we get going. Game Time app. I haven't been able to use the Game Time app here in Japan for the Nippon AM Fighters game that I'm going to be going to on Sunday. By the way, did I tell you? Oh, we'll get back to that. We should probably get through the sponsor here first. Game Time app is, however, my go-to app when I am trying to go to a game at Target Field, or actually when I'm going to any game anywhere in the United States, because it's so easy. The tickets, they specialize in last minute tickets or tickets that hard to get tickets. They've got all kinds of flash deals or zone deals, all kinds of different things that they've got. It's seamless. It's actually, of the apps that I have used to buy tickets, theirs has by far been the most seamless, where you just order the app. You can do it while you are at the bar 15 minutes before the game. And there are probably going to be some reasonable tickets for Twins games over the next week.
That's true. Yeah.
You will be able to
Good.
find you. I guarantee you You will find tickets cheaper on the Game Time app than you will even at the box office window. No question about it. And it's more seamless. It's much easier. So we're big fans of the Game Time app.
You can take the guesswork out of buying tickets with Game Time. For a limited time, all users can get $20 off any Major League Baseball purchase of $150 or more.
Wow.
What you want to do is download the Game Time app. It's not a website. It's just an app.
Right.
And then they're using this promo code. It's First Pitch is what they're using here.
Yep, that's right.
One word, First Pitch. Terms apply. That's code First Pitch, FIRSTPITCH, for $20 off any MLB purchase of $150 or more. Download the Game Time app today. Last minute tickets, lowest price guaranteed. Our next sponsor.
Probably one I should have been, if I had room in my luggage, I should probably be bringing to some place where the timetables are 14 hours different than there in Minneapolis.
Yeah,
is the Hatch.
It would have helped with jet lag. So the way Hatch works is, it's sort of, I would say, like a new school alarm, but it's a lot more than that.
Yeah, right.
It can help you get to sleep. It can help you sort of stay asleep, and then it can help you wake up in a way that is not so jarring as the typical, you know, alarm clock going off. That is just the worst possible way to start a day. And so it does a lot of that with sounds or lights or colors, just sort of environmental settings that it can do technology wise.
And it's the sort of thing that helps you build habits. You know, as you, once you kind of get into that routine, you could build the habit of falling asleep a little easier, or the habit of waking up a little easier. So,
yes. And it can help you, get a sleep schedule that you're actually comfortable with. It can kind of wake you up gradually, instead of just, you know, hitting you over the head with a hammer. Yeah, it's the worst. The absolute worst. So right now, Hatch is offering our listeners $20 off their purchase of the Hatch Restore, and you get free shipping. You go to hatch.co/Gleeman. That's Hatch, H-A-T-C-H, .co, not .com. Hatch.co/Gleeman to get $20 off and free shipping. That's hatch.co/Gleeman. Okay. You were going to say something about buying tickets to the Japanese.
Nippon Ham Fighters game on Sunday. We're going to go catch the Nippon Ham Fighters game on Sunday. Andrew Stevenson is on that team.
Oh, yeah.
Played with the Twins last year.
A million plus dollars to sign with them.
He is hitting about like the Twins lineup, actually a little worse. Like he'd fit right in with the Twins lineup right now. 11 games, he's hitting .118, I think, or something like that. I saw.
So, I am always fascinated because, I mean, he's pretty consistently been a really good AAA player in America, right, including last season for the Saints. He was like probably the Saints MVP for the season. And then didn't play much for the Twins, obviously. But I am always fascinated because I think the sense that everyone has of the Japanese league, or even more so like Korean leagues or other foreign leagues, is that, you know, they're at a triple A level or sometimes at a double A level and all that. Like a lot of times Japanese league, as we've seen over the years, have incredible star talent that is on par with certainly American, you know, Major League Baseball, but the depth of quality isn't always there so much. And they fill in the depth with American players like Andrew Stevenson, kind of minor league journeyman or ex-stars who have kind of been washed up a little. But what I'm always fascinated with, the assumption always is, well, this guy who's been great at AAA and he's been okay in the majors, he's going to go over to Japan and he's just going to be one of the best players in the Japanese league.
Right.
And it's about a coin flip with that. Like Williams Astudillo went over there and hit, you know, not well at all. Once in a while, a player will go over there and just be awesome and become an MVP. And then a lot of times, especially for pitchers, Jay Jackson did this. They'll then return to America in a new light and people will be like, okay, they've proven. Merrill Kelly is a good example of this with the Diamondbacks. They've kind of been able to use the Japanese league experience to prove themselves at a high level in a way that they weren't getting the opportunity to do in Major League Baseball. But there's also just a lot of instances where a real good AAA guy and a decent major leaguer goes to Japan and hits .190, and it's like, what happened? And I think a lot of it is maybe there's some culture shock. Maybe there's a, you know, loneliness or missing home or being away from your family could certainly affect the guy. But I think from a baseball standpoint, you're facing a lot different pitch mixes and approach to pitching over there.
I've also heard the strike zone is a little bit wider.
Yeah, that's fair too. But you're going to face a lot more splitters. You're going to face a lot different type and quantity of breaking balls. The velocity may not be quite on par, although there are certainly Japanese pitchers who can really throw it hard too, but it's a whole different skill set or strength set required to thrive over there, even if the overall level of competition is not the same, which is kind of goes to what we say about American AAA, which is that the line between, you know, a really good AAA player and a competent major leaguer is real thin. And sometimes the line between a real good AAA player and a bad Japanese player can be non-existent even for guys like Andrew Stevenson.
I'm taking a look at the roster right now. And so I looked at this yesterday and somehow I missed another English name in here. You know who else was playing for the Ham Fighters?
Who?
The Nippon Ham Fighters? Franmil Reyes.
Oh, yeah. Like I said, that was a formerly good major leaguer who kind of washed out much earlier than expected and is trying to get back on track. What is he?
He's hitting 111.
Yeah. But I mean, that's
he's got one home run and 43 plate appearances.
That's the type of guy, like when you see him, I mean, he hit 30 homers multiple times in the majors. He was a monster for a while. That's the type of guy when you see him sign with Japan and you look and he's, you know, 28 years old and you go, okay, I would expect that guy to hit 40 homers in Japan. And then you check back 3 months later and they got cut, you know, in the middle of the season because they were terrible. And it's, I don't know, it's interesting to me. I want to note here that I learned this many years ago and it was a revelation for me. The Nippon Ham Fighters.
Yes.
When I first heard that.
Nippon Ham is the company, right?
Right. I love the idea of ham fighters.
Right.
Like they fight ham for a living.
Right.
Yeah. I love that. Just to imagine the t-shirts. But it was very disappointing like 10 years ago when I you know, Wikipedia'd them to learn more and I realized, oh, the owner or the sponsor of the team is Nippon Ham.
Yeah.
That's not that fun. They're the fighters.
Yes.
But yes, I in my head still, they're fighting ham.
That's right, yeah. They're owned by the corporation Nippon Ham, which is a food distributor here. Right.
Yes. I picture them like going out to brunch and being served an omelet and then just beating the crap out of it.
I would absolutely fight a ham.
Yeah. I got jokes I can make, but I won't. Fighting ham, meat. I don't know. They got to get me on the morning show.
There you go.
I might have to go back on KFan just for this. Imagine I walk into the morning show. Hey, yeah, guys, 3 weeks ago we did a dumb bit about Nippon Ham. I'd like to continue that on the radio if that's possible.
They'd be like, go for it.
Well, that's true. I want to say they'd like get
Sauce
security.
Sauce would immediately jump in with I've bought my ham.
Yeah, I've been fighting ham for 40 years. Anyway, let's talk a little bit about the rotation.
Yeah.
You mentioned earlier that, you know, the good news is that Pablo Lopez, for the most part, looks like last season's version, I would say.
Yes.
He had the one mediocre start, but for the most part, he's looked perfectly solid Pablo Lopez-like, which is to say a number one starter. Very encouraged by that. He shut down a very good Orioles lineup after giving up a homer in the first inning. Bailey Ober, who had a terrible season debut in Kansas City, one of the worst starts you'll ever see, has bounced back pretty well from that and looks like his normal self.
Yep.
And then Joe Ryan hasn't quite had that dominant, you know, seven inning outing yet. But I think from a stuff standpoint, from a strikeout standpoint, from just an overall effectiveness standpoint, he's looked really good too. He's looked, let's put it this way, he's looked like the first half version of Joe Ryan from last year.
Yeah. And coming into the season, that we thought this was one of the keys to the season, in part because we know that the team should be looking at a postseason, you know, finish to this, that we wanted to make sure that the top half of this rotation found somebody that could, you know, end up being, you know, a playoff caliber starter in games two or three. Frankly, it looks like that's on track now with those guys, right?
I mean, I would say collectively those three have been as good or better than you could have reasonably expect.
Right.
They all three, especially Ryan, appears to have improved his stuff and pitch mix compared to last season. And so that really is, you know, when we thought the Twins were going to be the class of this division.
Right.
And we were silly in looking ahead to playoff scenarios. The priority was, as you said a second ago, how do you position yourself or how do you develop Ober and Ryan and keep all these guys healthy so that you get to October where you have Lopez in game one and you feel some level of confidence in a game two and game three starter, most likely in some order, Ryan or Ober, or we threw in Paddock there maybe.
Right.
And
two of those three have gone real well, right?
Yep. Yes. I mean, for the most part, the Lopez, Ryan, Ober, I'm very happy with how all three of them look. There's a long way to go, obviously,
right?
But that's what makes what's happened in the other two spots in the rotation so, you know, worrisome or discouraging, which is,
or glaring.
You know, yes. So Louis Varlin and Paddock have each made three starts. They have identical 836 ERAs. And for people who may not know, that's bad. 836 is bad in baseball.
Yeah.
Like 436 is like, oh, it's okay. 836 is like pretty bad. Like you'd probably have to retire and become a podcaster if you had an 836 ERA for that long in the major leagues.
We would
leagues.
Not wish on anybody.
No. Oh, God, no. Or a solo podcaster. Ooh, that's one of the saddest things you can be.
Right.
They've allowed collectively, the two of them, the fourth and fifth starters, in six starts, 28 total runs in 28 innings. So again, if you're new to baseball and you've somehow listened to this podcast, that's bad. That's really bad. And they've allowed 9 home runs among those 28 total runs in 28 innings. I think with Varlin, you know, first of all, I wouldn't be shocked if you told me you're going to be, 20 games into the season and you're not going to be real thrilled with how either of those guys have performed. I wouldn't be shocked by that. I mean, there were questions with Varlin overall, and certainly Paddock coming back and resuming starting for the first time in multiple years after a second Tommy John. You figure there's going to be some, some speed bumps along the way.
Right.
This is a level that I think even the most, skeptical among us probably wouldn't have expected. With Varlin, I think his stuff and his velocity have looked great. Like, he's throwing harder. He's sort of found the midpoint between how hard he threw as a starter last season and how hard he threw in the bullpen last season, which is like, as a starter last year, he was like 95, and in the bullpen, he was like 99. And now as a starter, he's been able to maintain, 96, 97 miles an hour velocity, relatively deep in starts. We haven't seen him go that deep in starts because he's gotten knocked around and he's exited from a performance standpoint.
Right.
But, I think his velocity and just his overall raw stuff, it sounds crazy to say about a guy with an 8-something ERA, but I'm actually sort of encouraged by that. I think that's at or above what they had hoped to see from him as a starter to begin the season. But his problem that we've seen over and over again is the same thing that we've seen in past years with him, and the same, kind of questions people raised with him as a starter, which is when he misses, when he doesn't hit his spot that he's attempting to hit,
right,
he leaves these incredibly fat pitches, fastballs and non-fastballs, just middle over the heart of the plate with a big sign, blinking a red sign, light that says destroy me. And most hitters do that. And that's been the problem. And I feel like in years past, and certainly now the past two or three starts this season, he's kind of chugging along. You go, oh, he's throwing 97. He's throwing strikes. He's doing pretty well. And then, oh, 3-run homer.
Yeah.
And on a bad pitch too. It's not like they're going down and digging these balls out, or they're, turning on balls that are out of the strike zone. These are fat pitches and hitters are doing with them what they should do with them. And
even though they're down in the count a lot of the time.
Right. Even with two strikes.
Yeah, right.
And I know Dan talked to him about that the other day and wrote about it. And Varlin basically said, I can't keep going like this with two strikes. Like, I'm letting the team down. I want to kill myself. Like, he didn't say that, but, so on one hand, I think this is an easier thing to improve and develop and correct when you're working from a baseline of 97 miles an hour with, some sharp breaking balls. If you can just improve his command, the control is fine. The raw stuff is fine. The durability is fine. All that stuff. He's checking those boxes. It's the command or the location of his misses that is not fine. And you can't, you can't throw 85 pitches and be happy because 80 of them hit where you want. That is good. Like, you've done a good job there. But if the 5 that didn't hit the location you want are just in the absolute middle of the strike zone, you're not going to have good starts, even if you're, throwing where you want 80% of the time or 90% of the time. And so I think that's what he has to overcome. I do think he's capable of doing that. I mean, the question for me isn't so much with him, like, is he a good major league pitcher? It's more, in what role will he be a good major league pitcher? And I'm fine with them giving him leeway to prove or disprove that as a starting pitcher. But like, unfortunately or fortunately, maybe we saw enough of a glimpse of him as a reliever
Right.
that it's going to be so tempting the longer he goes not succeeding as a starter for them to just go, ah, oh, screw it. Just put him in the bullpen for the next 10 years.
Yeah, I mean, you talked a little bit at the beginning of this about how, you know, comparable Varland and Paddock have ended up being up to this point in the season. Another thing they had in common is that they both looked, one of the reasons we were both optimistic about them coming into this season is because they both looked so good out of the bullpen at the end of the season, right? That was even more the case for Paddock because Paddock was coming back from Tommy John surgery. And the fact that he was able to hump it up to 97, 98 miles per hour as a reliever in the bullpen was encouraging because he thought, well, at least he's got back the velocity. And in fact, he has had back his velocity. Yeah. His fastball velocity has been really good. And he is clearly trying to work in a slider that as his, you know, third pitch to, or I guess maybe fourth pitch because he's throws that curveball a lot. But, you know, he has used his fastball a lot less to rely on that slider a fair amount of the time. But, yeah, in both cases, and you're not paying Paddock so much that you could, you know, you would hesitate to move him to the bullpen either if you had to. You know, that is not a bad fallback position for the two guys, right? It's just, you know, you don't
need
have that
many, start.
You don't have a seventh guy right now. You don't even necessarily have a sixth guy. Like, you, maybe it was nice to see Simeon Woods Richardson have a really nice start over last weekend. But, you know, at some point, you do have to have some people to start games.
Years ago, several years ago, we were at Glenn Perkins's home doing a podcast with him, and we were talking to him about his transition from off injured and inconsistent starter to reliever. And one of us said something like, I'll say it was me because this is going to come across as stupid. So I'll say it was me who said it. I honestly don't remember. But it was like, man, they should just move that guy and this guy. Why don't they just move everybody to the bullpen? You add miles an hour. And he goes, it's a great idea. Somebody has to get to the sixth inning first works.
Yeah.
And that's sort of where they are. It's not, you know, almost all these pitchers, and certainly Paddock and Varland are examples of this, would be better or more consistent out of the bullpen. And I know people might be saying, well, if you're leaving fat pitchers,
Pablo Lopez might be too.
You know, well, I mean, honestly, that's, I know you're mostly joking, but we see that in the playoffs a lot.
Well,
where like
right.
they'll move like Max Scherzer or Justin Verlander or somebody like that to the bullpen, like on their throw day, their in between starts off day, and they'll unleash them for an inning, and you'll be like, oh my God, this guy could be the best closer of all time. And
it's right.
Like, yeah, no. Right. Instead, he's just an all-star starting pitcher. But, and I know people are probably saying, like, well, if Varland is struggling as a starter because he's leaving fat pitches over the plate and he's getting punished for it, leaving fat pitches over the plate as a reliever, that's equally dangerous. And I mean, but the difference you would hope is that, well, two things, three things, actually. One, as a reliever, you're going to change your pitch mix where you're going to pare it down to the essential pitches. So you're going to be less exposed with your weaker offerings. Number two, as we saw last year with him, you know, he has plenty of stuff as a starter, but his stuff as a reliever is like truly high end. Like, it's 99.
Right.
And you can get away with more mistakes at 99 than you can even at 96 or 97.
Right.
And then the third thing is, from a like a in-game stamina standpoint, is he has tended to have significantly more success. This is true of a lot of starting pitchers. First time through the lineup, and then second and third time, he gets knocked around. Well, there is no second or third time through the lineup as a reliever. And so all those things give me confidence, and it's probably the same, relatively speaking, with Paddock. But I will say that I think Paddock's raw stuff has looked fine.
Yeah.
I think he has struggled with location the same way that Varland has, in that his misses have just been on a tee for hitters. But then the other thing with Paddock, I don't think he's had good control either. And that's not surprising for a guy. Whereas Varland, I think, has continued to pump strikes. I don't think Paddock has really done that. He's walked too many guys. He's been more behind in counts than Varland has been. And that's not surprising. That's sort of standard with guys who are coming back from Tommy John surgery.
Right, yeah.
But, you know, the
especially first year back, right?
Right. The combination of those things, you're never going to succeed if you're not consistently getting ahead in the count and you're also leaving your mistakes over the plate. And that's what we've seen. I mean, he just hasn't, Varland has at least continued to throw strikes and miss bats, whereas Paddock really hasn't done that. And then they've both given up a bunch of home runs. But again, I mean, they're three starts in here. So we're reading a lot into it because this is all we have to read into it. And it sort of also matches the narratives on both players in terms of question marks and skepticism. But the other thing is, what's the alternative? The alternative is to, first of all, Simeon Woods-Richardson can only replace one of them.
Right.
And are we so certain that Simeon Woods-Richardson, based off of one good start
oh, of course,
against the Tigers, is fully formed and ready to go? I will caution that 5 days before that, he gave up 7 runs to a AAA team.
Right.
And had a terrible year last year at AAA. Now he's looked better and he's changed his mechanics and he's throwing harder. I'm willing to believe that long term he's a solid back end starter or maybe even better. But are we so certain that that's the case right now? And again, he can only replace one of them. And when he does replace him, are you moving whoever he replaces to the bullpen? And then who's your kind of starter in waiting at AAA then at that point? David Fest, that you're getting, you know, you're cutting into the depth here pretty deep, pretty soon, if you start to really react to the starter struggles. On the other hand, we just sort of talk through the same level of decision-making with Matt Wallner, right? I mean,
right.
They've been maybe not quite as lost as Matt Wallner, but an 8.5 ERA is similar to a, you know, batting average.
To be fair, 9 of those runs, of those 13 runs Paddock gave up, he gave up in one start, you know, yesterday's start. He's been a little more consistent. I mean, he's taken, I think, too many pitches to kind of get through the four right. innings that he got through in the first two games. But, you know, and, you know, I'd still like to see him, you know, give up a lot fewer home runs. But, you know, we are hitting him a little bit when he's down right after his worst start. And I think you're right. It's comparable to Wallner, but I think it's even worse for starting pitchers to be judging them after this. The three starts both those guys have had, I think, are versus what, the Brewers, the Dodgers, and the Orioles, too.
Well, yeah, like we right? said, the like, Twins have basically only played good teams so far.
Right? Well, that's true, right. So,
yeah, let's see him against the White Sox or whatever. I do agree that, like, but the problem with starting pitchers is, you know, when Matt Wallner hits one, you know, 050 for three
right.
weeks,
right?
It hurts you and it's obvious, but you know, you drop them to the bottom of the lineup, you platoon them, you take them out for pinch hitters, whatever. The impact there is somewhat limited. When a starting right. pitcher goes out and gives up 8 runs,
right.
The impact of that is you lost that game, basically.
One of the things that, you know, because we continue to do the podcast and because we continue to run Twins Daily, I need to be involved with some things. I do try to follow the Twins while I'm, you know, halfway across the world. I will tell you, it's harder to watch this team when they are to try and catch up on and convince yourself to watch a condensed game or pile through the stats when you know that they're getting the snot kicked out of them. On Friday morning, Wednesday morning, I guess, was when we were flying from Osaka to Sapporo, and I was kind of excited about sitting in the airport for a couple of hours because I was going to be able to listen to the Twins game. It was a morning flight, and then that's the late night, the Tuesday night game for the Orioles or something. And I get to the airport and it's fifth inning or sixth inning, and they're down 9-2, and I said, right. or something like that. I was so there where I was just like, you know, or I could read a book. You know, I could not, as much as I like to listen to Chris Atterbury and, you know, kind of catch up on the team, I think maybe I'm just going to read, you know, a book.
have you thought about like taking up knitting or something?
Right.
I would say you can talk to your lovely wife, but I wouldn't wish that upon her.
No, exactly.
Well, you're saying that it's become a burden. Your Twins fandom.
It felt like it that Tuesday. I think a lot of people right now are watching this team feel like that they're Twins. I would say Minnesota sports fandom in general has sort of become a burden for, you know, most of the population that actually been a part of the Minnesota sports fandom.
I'm a huge Wolves fan. I know you're also a Wolves fan. Their playoff series starts Saturday, and I'm incredibly annoyed because the first three games are simultaneously going on when the Twins are playing.
Wow.
And so Dan is also not covering the first part of this homestand.
so
I'm just
be
on
there.
My own. So I have no excuse to go skip over to Target Center and watch. So I'm going to be in the press box streaming that. So hopefully you're slightly wrong about the state of Minnesota sports, although typically that's not the case.
That has not been the case versus Phoenix this year, boy.
Yeah. No, that was it's always bad when you're in a position to maybe get the 1 seed or certainly get the 2 seed if you win your final game, Instead, you get like kind of destroyed at home. And then because you got destroyed at home, you have to play that team that just destroyed you back at home. It's right. Like, okay, well, how do we get away from this?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's where we're at. Yeah, I don't know. I think, you know, we should say our last sponsor.
Yeah, we should. That's a good call. You want to do the sound effect?
Chomps. I botched the first one. Hold on. People love the chomp sound effect.
I love the chomp sound effect. Who doesn't love the chomp sound effect? I wish I could easily get some meat sticks here, because meat sticks are just one of those things where when you are feeling snacky, you want a little something to eat, you want a little salt, you want a little protein, something that's going to fill you up. I love having those about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, 3:30 in the afternoon, sort of my prime chomps time. I also will have them for breakfast. By the way, that's a pretty good. You're heading down to do the podcast with Aaron Gleeman. You want a little something in your stomach, just to, you know, keep you a little less nauseous during the podcast. You might go grab yourself a chops out of the pantry.
They sent us sort of a tester kit with all. I think they have 10 different flavors. Some focused on health, some focused on taste, some focused on both. You know who'd really like chomps? The Nippon Ham Fighters would probably really like chomps.
You are correct.
So yes, you can get chomps, and our listeners can get 20% off their first order and free shipping when you go to chomps, which is chomps, chomps.com/Gleeman. Go to chomps.com/Gleeman to see all the flavors and get 20% off your first order plus free shipping. That's chomps.com/Gleeman.
Didn't you say you saw them in the Twins locker room?
I did. In the clubhouse, the Twins have like a cart that they wheel around that has like healthy protein-based or vitamin-based snacks.
Right.
And it's just sort of like always available. And I did notice there was chomps on the on there this year, which was not the case last year. So clearly they're going to chomps.com/Gleeman and
probably
sign up.
Yeah, well, that's probably why that's probably why they just signed a new contract with us, Aaron.
Yeah, it could be. I don't know. As we sit here, they just passed the 10% point of the season.
All right.
Which, as I like to say, that can also sound like a threat. You know what I mean? Usually.
Yeah. Going back to our discussion of what if this lineup really is just this bad.
Right. Most of the time when you say to a baseball fan, hey, man, it's still early. It's 10% of the way. We're 17 games into a 162 game season. It's meant to be reassuring and calming and to, you know, kind of tamp down the frustration and anger. But it could also come across as, hey, man, we're 17 games into a 162 game season. You got so much more of this to get through if it doesn't get any better. I will say, I think in part because of the television situation the last few years and the fact that that was not solved at all by the Twins this year, so much of the potential viewing audience for the Minnesota Twins either can't watch it or has to go through hoops or pay exorbitant prices to watch it, that we hear all the time from people who say, yeah, I haven't watched the Twins for 3 years. I just listened to the podcast. And the businessman side of me thinks, that's great. Mm-hmm. If no one ever watched the Twins and they just listened to the podcast, we would become so wealthy. It would be ridiculous.
Sure. Yeah. Right.
But the, you know, Minnesotan and lifelong Twins fan part of me thinks, well, that's sad, isn't it?
Right. Yeah. That's
that's however, true. Maybe not so sad. All these people who were so upset
are saved. Yeah.
Yeah. About the television situation not improving and the streaming situation not improving and the local blackouts and all that stuff. Maybe they did you a favor, unfortunately.
That's right.
Crappy, but maybe that's the case. I feel bad a little bit for Corey Provis, who steps into the job and is met with a team that can't hit. And
and there's no question doing that job is tougher when the team is bad than when the team is good. God. Can you imagine?
I think
especially when you're employed by the team, you can't really sound off on like, oh, that's just another disgusting at bat.
Right. Yeah. I mean, think of
what's he looking for?
I don't think we've been ripping anyone to shreds over the last hour plus on this show.
Right.
But I would estimate that, you know, 40% of the things we've said on this episode would get us called into someone's office at Target Field. I mean, I can tell you that I'm not a Twins right. employee. Right. And about 10% of the things I say on this show get me called into somebody's office it's at Target
true.
Field.
That's true. Yeah.
So, and I also wonder, maybe I'll ask Corey this tomorrow when I see him, or before Friday's game when I see him. I wonder if television is even more difficult when a team is just not playing well, because radio lends itself more to kind of story time.
Sure. Yeah, that's fair.
Drawn out conversation or, you know, everyone knows this is a blowout. We can spend, you know, two half innings just talking about something that happened to Dan Gladden in 1991 or whatever. You can sort of do that on television,
right?
But you still got to read the ads. You still got to just, you know, what's in front of you. There's still, I feel like it's less.
I think that's an excellent point.
It's less accepted, I'll say, from the audience.
I'll give you another one.
Be BSing for an inning and a half, basically.
I'll give you another reason why it's easier on radio probably than it is on TV, which is, you know, just a bit outside. You know, you're, you're kind of painting the picture. You're not all seeing the picture together at the same time. Whereas on TV, you got to be like, I don't know how to not talk about what I just saw.
Right. Although, here's what I get. You, that's funny. Right.
But what all of us just saw, I don't know how to not talk about that.
I do wonder, this just occurred to me, so I apologize if this is really stupid even by my standards, but like early on in the radio broadcasting days of baseball,
right.
when there was not only didn't TV exist, obviously, but radio was so rudimentary that like they were getting like almost Morse code signals describing the play-by-play.
Right, sure.
And then
right.
a guy who wasn't even at the game would like use two wooden sticks to make a bat crack sound.
Sure.
You know, it was almost like a radio play, old school radio play. Sure. And then you got to the point where broadcasters were actually at the games and they were traveling and they were describing what they were seeing. However, you could feel very confident for decades and decades of baseball radio broadcasting that no one listening to you was seeing the game.
Right, exactly.
And so, like you said, a guy could throw a ball to the backstop and you could say, ooh, ball just a couple inches outside there by Johnson or whatever. And then, you know, as you get into like the 70s and 80s and stuff like that, obviously people bring their Walkmans to the ballpark.
Sure.
Or the games are just more readily available. And maybe people at home, you know, turn down the volume of the TV and turn up the volume of the radio. So then
Walkmans,
the ability,
by the way.
Yeah. In the 80s, I said. You didn't have a Walkman in the 80s?
No, but Walkmans don't have radios on them.
Yeah, they. I had. Yes, they do.
All right, all right. I think you had a little transistor radio. Yeah, you have a little AM transistor radio in the 70s.
My trusty Walkman had a tape deck and an AM and an FM radio, John. Come on.
Okay, all right. Okay.
Come on, pal. but once you reach that point where people were simultaneously watching and listening to you on radio, well, then you have to have at least some faithful description of what you're seeing.
Right.
Like you can be a little charitable maybe,
right?
But you can't say, ooh, tough hop and the third baseman can't handle it when it just like went through his legs or
right.
whatever.
Yeah, that's right.
And so now we've reached the point where anybody who's listening on radio, not only could they be watching along on television, but even if they weren't watching along on television, if they were curious about a play based on how you described it on radio,
right.
They could within seconds just watch the video of it.
Right. Right.
So now their ability to just be full of S on the radio, which is probably one of the more fun components of that job, just lying directly to your audience. Well, you can't do that anymore. I think they should. I'm going to talk to Chris Atterbury. It's his first year as a full-time guy. He's probably feeling his oats.
Right.
I'm going to tell him, get back to the old school way of describing things completely full of BS and see how long it takes somebody to describe it to you. I know I could get Gladden on board with that.
That's funny.
Yeah, it's like, you know, Paddock gives up a 900-foot home run, and he's like, ooh, another wall.
Just clears the fit. Yeah.
I like that as a premise. Let's see. We mentioned, just to finish up with a couple of notes here, but we mentioned last couple episodes ago about Jorge Alcala being kind of the odd man out, getting the short end of the stick from a bullpen standpoint.
Right.
They felt like They just needed fresh arms because they were getting so many short starts and long bullpen games. And so they called up Matt Bowman, who's just a 30-something-year-old random journeyman, basically. And they sent down Alcala. I talked at the time how I just didn't feel like they're doing him any favors at any point over the last 3 years. From a usage standpoint, from a send down standpoint, you know, why, when he was dealing with arm problems for now going on 3 years, are you using him multiple innings at a time? They were going to use him for a third inning in the game at home against Cleveland a couple of weeks ago, and he basically asked out and said, I got a sore arm. They gave him 2 days off, and then he pitched back-to-back games immediately after that, at which point then he was sent to AAA. I just feel it feels off to me in terms of how they're handling him. I heard from several people inside and outside the organization who said, well, you know, let's wait to see how he's used and how often he's used at AAA. You know, maybe we felt like his arm was getting kind of worn down, and there were some signs of that in terms of his velocity in those back-to-back outings.
Yeah.
You know, maybe we're sending him there as much because we needed a fresh arm, and he has a minor league option, which you're always going to be getting the short end.
He's got a lot of minor league options, just FYI, right?
30, for some reason, they said. Till he's 60 years old, they can option him. He has three. There's another. You could tell I'm getting wacky here. Yeah, I like that as a premise. One out of every 50 guys called up just gets 30 minor league options.
That's right. They're just an indentured servant for now for the rest of your life. Well,
that's how it used to work back in the day. But yeah, he has three. But and so I could kind of go along with the idea of, hey, we think he's getting worn down. We think he needs a little bit of a break. It's easier to do that for him and for us at AAA. Now, my response to that would have been, well, why the hell are you using him for two or three innings at a time and back-to-back days if he's at risk of wearing down? Right. But all of that is now out the window because he made his first AAA appearance. He went two innings and 34 pitches. Why?
All right.
What are we doing with him? We're turning him into a long reliever now? I don't know. Ridden hard and put away wet is how I would describe it.
Maybe what they were trying to tell you is that they're converting him to a starter.
Yeah, 10 years later.
Maybe that's the new plan. Well, that you just see how we're going to use him down there. We're going to start out by stretching him out a little bit, and then he'll be starting a game in a week and a half.
Yeah, great. So I don't know. My hope is that he can somehow persevere through this because I do think he's a useful arm at worst and a good arm at best. But I just get the feeling that they either disagree or just don't care for some reason. And that's strange to me, but we'll see. Meanwhile, Matt Bowman has pitched once in the 6 days since he was called up, and it was a situation that didn't matter. And now they can't send him to the minors because he does not have a minor league option.
Yeah. I mean, they didn't swap him out for Alcala. They called up Bowman the day before. And then when Theobar was
correct,
Theobar came back. It was Alcala that was there, right?
Yes, they chose to demote Alcala versus
Bowman,
ditching Bowman
or Funderburk or
So yeah, just something to keep tabs on. So okay, 10% of the way through the season, it's if it's not off the rails, it's in danger of going off the rails. I would say, but they do have an opportunity based on going home now for two series. And just, I would say the next four or five series are below average in terms of difficulty. Let's put it that way, including seven games against the White Sox, who are, you know, a bad AAA team at this point. Part of me thinks it should be positioned as, you know, you need to get right here. You need to use this as an opportunity to claw back to 500 so that you can get to 500 by, you know, early May. And then you can kind of start moving forward with a delayed march to the division title. But part of me also think maybe it's more realistic to use this as a barometer and just say, if they don't do that, if over the next 15 games, they go 7-8 or 6-9 or something like that, then I would be at the point in, you know, early May where, similar to, let's see, what was it, 2021, when they were horrible in April and Alex Colomé was blowing saves and everything, you get to a point that no matter how bad the division is, if you can't sort of tread water at any point and you're just taking on water and sinking constantly, you are what your record is at some point. And, you know, 10%, 15%, 20% of the season, it's still early.
Yeah. One of the questions you got on the Patreon was like, you know, at what point is it not early anymore? Right. And the traditional answer is kind of like basically Memorial Day, right? Like, you know, for individual players, it's basically Memorial Day, but for teams, it's a little bit earlier than that. Right. And, you know, what I have seen in terms of sort of just the anxiety and anxiousness level going on about this team over the last week, you know, it's not too surprising that they had struggled, that this beat up team is struggling against the Orioles, right?
Sure.
And you know, I would like to have lost 2 out of 3 as opposed to 3, but like you said, you know, they blew that third game, and you know, that's the way that works. But you know, the reason we say this all the time, happiness is not about where you are. It's about which direction you're going. It's about the trend, right? And this trend, the problem right now with this team, what I want to see out of these next 12 games, 13 games, right, isn't for them to claw back to 500. I want to see a trend that is positive. You know, this team has been going, well, I mean, they're on a 4-game losing streak. So, you know, of course they're trending downward, right? But I mean, we are seeing, you know, less and less. You know, like we said, the starting rotation, in some ways it's been better than we thought it was going to be, but some ways it's been worse there at the back end. You know, the bullpen, which, you know, has been outperforming what it's done, has rung just enough leaks now to be pretty good and to lose a couple of games. And, you know, the lineup continues to be trending downward.
Yes.
Or you know, they're like, you see a couple people trend upwards, like, you know,
they've maintained, religion. Except they're at the bottom already when they've maintained.
Right.
So it's
listen, if we knew that, you know, by this point in the season, Ryan Jeffers was going to be your everyday number two hitter in this lineup, you know, which is where they generally put their best hitter. We'd have thought to ourselves, well, either Ryan Jeffers is become the next Mike Piazza, right? Or
maybe he is.
Right. Well, yeah, kind of has. You're right. Or something's gone really, really wrong with the rest of the lineup. And probably a little bit of both in this particular case.
I will say, you know, maybe we're or I am just shortchanging Ryan Jeffers because, you know, this is the type of hitter they were hopeful that he would
for
be
sure
when he was like drafted and when he was in the minors. And then what changed was, he improved so much defensively that they stopped viewing him as like a DH who could catch and started viewing him as a catcher who could hit. But then he had those back-to-back horrible years with some injuries involved. And I feel like the expectation that he would be an impact bat kind of just went up in smoke with that.
Right.
And then last year, he loses his starting job initially to Vasquez and then kind of works through the first half to regain a split of it. And finishes the season with the best OPS by any catcher in the American League.
Yep.
And yet I still feel like, and this is my own fault, he's maybe kind of under the radar and there was a lot of skepticism. It's like, well, let's see him do it again.
Right.
And, you know, we're 10% of the way through the season. He's been even better.
Right.
He's got like a, I don't think he's got like a 160 OPS plus. That is, you joke, but that's like Mike Piazza range.
Right.
And that's not going to continue, obviously, but, you know, he might just be a really good hitting catcher at this stage, which would be great for them. And I don't know, part of, and I'm looking for bright spots, and he's certainly, from a lineup standpoint, he's probably, him and Kirilloff, I would say, are the two biggest bright spots. They have to be.
Well, right? And I've been hesitant to embrace him because he's always killed left-handed bats, but he's still a right-handed hitter and you face a lot of right-handed bats and so on. I don't think I recognized how good he was last year versus right-handed pitchers because he's still put up like a 800 OPS versus right-handed pitchers last year. And he's been equally as good now. Like,
right.
He's That's just one of the really good.
One of the adjustments he made, I mean, he worked a lot defensively last offseason and on this offseason too, but he changed sort of his setup mechanically. You'll notice, like, if people watch him before the pitch comes, he takes his bat and he sort of points it down towards the back of his feet over his shoulder. And then he sort of, I don't know, he kind of hikes it up a little bit, almost like he's like chopping wood kind of. And he's trying to get like a bat tip as like a timing mechanism to kind of get his swing started. And he felt like that allowed him to be much more competitive against right-handed pitchers who are throwing him, you know, sliders down and away and all that. He could reach pitches from a swing standpoint that he just couldn't get to in previous years. And yeah, we've seen that now. quite a bit. The one other, we can end on this, but like, you know, it is a factor that our assumptions about the Twins have been very wrong so far, obviously. But it's also a factor in terms of how likely are they to bounce back and right the ship, that our assumptions about the rest, and not just us, but everyone's assumptions about the rest of the AL Central has been pretty wrong so far too. I mean, Cleveland as of right now has the best record in the American League.
Yeah.
Despite losing Shane Bieber. Detroit is, you know, 500-ish, but I think has been slightly better than people expected. In Kansas City, for all we joked about, why are people viewing them as sort of a trendy sleeper pick?
So far, I'm wrong about that.
Right.
Sure.
And so when you think about the Twins' chances of getting back on track and making a run here, it's not just about the Twins. It's possible that, you know, 84 wins isn't going to win this division the way we thought it might win this division,
maybe,
which increases the degree of difficulty for the Twins and raises the level that they have to bounce back. Now, again, extremely early, so we'll see.
I was surprised to see that those two teams at the top of the AL Central, Cleveland and Kansas City, have the highest run differential, the best run differential right now in the American League.
It's been somewhat legit. Now, it's a small sample and all that. I think at the very least, we can say pretty confidently that, you know, the American League Central, not only was it the worst division in baseball last year, it was one of the worst divisions of all time last year. At the very least, I think we can say confidently that it's that's no longer going to be the case, which makes it harder to win it and makes it a taller task for the Twins to sort of do that.
Who have they been playing, though? Have they been playing other AL Central teams?
Well, they played the Twins, both of them.
Well, that's true, but they've also played a lot of the White Sox, right? Yes,
that is definitely a factor. The White Sox are bad enough that they are a legitimate factor in terms of trying to figure out schedule strength and kind of the ebbs and flows of the season. They've gone beyond just a typical run-of-the-mill, very bad team to the point that they're, I think, what are they, 3-15 or something like that? Okay. So, yeah, that's definitely a factor.
Go ahead. I was just taking a look at Kansas City and who they played. Let's see. Oh, they went at Baltimore and took only 1 out of 3. But, yeah, let's see. Four games versus the White Sox. Houston, by the way. They swept Houston.
As the Twins.
They swept Houston, and Houston, I was going to say, what the Twins need to do is they need to face the Astros pitching staff right now. That Houston is 6-14, and their pitching staff, they're giving up like 5.5 runs on per game, something like that.
I believe, unless this has changed like in the last day or two, Houston is without all five of their projected or like preferred starting pitchers. Now, it might be only four now.
So they played Houston at the right time. They've also had 3 games versus the Mets, and 7 of their games have been versus the White Sox right now.
Right, which is definitely a factor. The Twins now, in the next 2 weeks, are going to get a chance to join that party, and they need to join it in a big way. One last thing I just wanted to say, thank you to Nick Holter Axios, who interviewed us a little bit ago and then wrote an article earlier this week about three different Dane Moore, Matthew Collar, and then us, three different local Minnesota, independent Minnesota sports podcasts that, I'll use his words, are thriving in an overall media landscape for sports that is not particularly good nationally. I know Nick from way back when, from Liquor Lyles hanging out. And it was fun to be interviewed by him, but also just fun to talk about the business and stuff along those lines. And he did a nice job with the article. And more than that, it is my hope that, you know, maybe more people interview us and write about us. Because it's always strange to me, this is going to sound incredibly pompous, but that's fine, that there's a Twins podcast produced by two dudes and no one else that gets, you know, 15,000 listeners per free show and has, you know, 4,000 to 5,000 people paying to listen to it. And nobody from a media environment seems to really take note. And yet you open up the newspaper and whatever websites and they're doing full pages about authors who sell 800 books and guys who have a, you know, 0.7 rating on the radio and all this stuff. And I'm always like, what's the disconnect here other than me being very pompous and unlikable and no one wanting to give me press,
you think I would, you think I'd make up for that though?
No, you're not super, you have some superpowers, but it's limited. Maybe the Japanese media will pick up on Now that you're recording this show from there.
Yeah, right.
Maybe they will view you as a local make good story.
Honestly, in the mall that is right below this hotel, they've got that podcast studio. We could just walk in there.
Oh, it's in your hotel.
Yeah, well, so the hotel is on top of a mall. Oh, right? Okay. As it was starting from like the seventh floor above is a hotel. And yes, that the podcast studio is down there on that first floor of that mall. So
yeah, at 4:41 a.m. my time, John sent me a photo, and it was, what was that, make it 6:41?
Yeah, 6:41 p.m. my time. PM in Japan. Yeah, right.
And you were at a mall, this mall that you're describing. You sent me a picture of a podcast booth with like clear window. It basically, it's setting podcasters up to be sort of talking monkeys at the zoo.
That's right. Yeah.
In the middle of a mall, people can look at you and listen to you. And yeah, I know how John works. And I just know you were like, oh, it'd be good for a live event here. We could do a few things.
I don't know how much I've talked to you about that. We've had offers like that, Mr. Gleeman.
You don't even tell me about
it. Not even entertain those. No.
No. Yes. We had an offer. We have an offer. I've been talking to them because you've been in Japan about a fairly large venue wanting us to do live events.
Oh.
And part of me is like, this would be really fun and a great opportunity
for somebody else.
If my brain wasn't as odd as it is. But we'll see. Maybe right, you can. Yeah, right. Sometimes you can talk me into it despite myself. Thank you to our sponsors.
Right. We started with, RotoWire was one of the first ones, and then SodaStick was one of the first ones. We ended with Hatch. In between, we hit Game Time and Chomps.
Yes.
So
you completely botched the order of those, but I'll forgive
you. Yeah, I did. Hatch wasn't the last one. Chomps was. But
we will be back. When will we be back? Monday on the Patreon side?
Yeah, so we're only going to be back with a free one for another 2 weeks. It'll be a little over 2 weeks. It'll be that Saturday morning, 2 weeks from tomorrow, that we'll be doing the next free one. We'll be doing a Patreon, two Patreons next week, I think, probably Monday and Friday, something like that. And then probably one Patreon the week after that. And then we'll probably, unless you're going to do a couple on your own with some guests and or solo mailbag.
This might be my new thing. Just kind of, I don't know, just talk. I'm almost like Lenny Bruce. I just go on stage and I just rant by myself.
I think if you can get Hayes back in town next week, I think it'd be great for one of you guys to do one from the ballpark. I think that'd be fun.
Yeah, I could probably make that happen. So yeah, Patreon, Patreon, Patreon.com/Gleeman. Make me even more pompous by subscribing to our Patreon.
We don't blame you if you don't want a lot more Twins coverage at this point.
Listen, gallows humor is still humor.
Exactly right. Sometimes it's nice to be able to help cope is to kind of talk through this
group
stuff, so.
Group therapy session for only $1. It's not even $1 an hour. It's like 70 cents an hour.
That's right.
So where are you going to find group therapy for cheaper than that? until then.
Yeah, we will talk 2 weeks from now. Otherwise, we'll hopefully catch you on the Patreon sometime next week. Bye-bye.